I'm Kevin, a.k.a. Neon Nazgul from the Operation Pug Podcast, a proud member of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're listening to now. The opinions expressed are those of each individual host. Check out all the other podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com and get ready, because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
This is PopX Cast, where science fiction meets pop culture. We are a geek podcast for geek culture, so are you ready to get your geek on? Sit back, relax, step out of your TARDIS and warm up your chimichangas, because this is PopX Cast.
You are listening to PopX Cast, where science fiction meets pop culture.
Captain's Log Supplemental.
PopX Cast.
Hasta la vista, baby.
And welcome, everyone. This is PopX Cast, episode 58, coming to you on this June the 11th, 2017. Lindsay Badger, how are you?
Joseph Burke. I'm doing great.
Oh, stop it. Stop it.
I'm doing great.
So what's new?
Look at us. We're all twinks in our PopX shirts.
I know, so right? Cute. It's just like, you know, I'm trying to represent. I'm trying to represent the podcast.
Yeah, we got one here. We got one there.
Oh, there's pod.
Yeah, there's just
Wait. There's a mouse pad.
Okay. Okay.
Anyway, I digress. Moving on. So, if you're tuning in this week, this is our Wonder Woman special, and so hopefully you guys will enjoy this, as we have kind of a little bit of a bonus for you. We have her origin story, as well as the film review. So definitely get out on the Twitters, the Instagrams, your Facebooks, and kind of drop a little message. Hey, guys, PopX Cast is live right now, and come and join us in the fun. But all right, so let's just dive in, shall we, Lindsay?
Sure, let's do it.
Hey, guys, welcome to PopX, where science fiction meets pop culture. I'm your host, Joe Burke, Central Florida's seasoned comic book nerd and retro enthusiast. We'd like to welcome everyone joining us live here on PopX.live and the Geeks.live chat room. Come hang out with us and join the conversation at PopXcast.com.
That's right. And if you missed episode 57, origin stories, we talked about Celestials and Adam Warlock. Mm-hmm. Make sure you check out our official website at PopXcast.com for this and other great past shows from PopXcast.
Mm-hmm.
And while we're at it, I didn't introduce myself.
Yes, please do.
We're a little out of order. That's okay. I am Lindsay Badger, your favorite geeky yogi.
Hi, Lindsay.
By the way. Hi.
Hi.
My name's Lindsay, and I'm here to nerd out. and while you're here, I hope you enjoy the show. But make sure at the end of the show, you head over to Google Play or iTunes and click that subscribe button. Make sure you catch up on all the other amazing shows from PopX Archive, and while you're there, make sure you also review us and give us all those lovely 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 stars, because we love you, and we love good reviews, and we like critical ones too, but yes, we love the good ones.
Absolutely. We have a newcomer over in the chat room joining us right now. We have Darth Baca, and well, we want to welcome you, and we have Luke hanging out with us. Luke is always one of our faithful, and he's always here as well. So definitely send this out on your Twitter. Say, hey, guys, at PopX Cast is live right now, and they're going to be talking about Wonder Woman. So let everybody know, okay? But diving on into the news this week, we'll be right back. Don't go nowhere. The news headlines is coming up.
Extra, extra. Read all about it. This is PopX News, coming to you live right here on PopXCast.com.
Yes, and hope you guys enjoyed that. And, you know, I don't know why we do this. You know where I'm getting ready to go right now. If you've watched anything in pop culture in the past 48 hours, you know that one of the greats has left us, and I'm talking about Mr. Adam West. This is a sad day for all those in the Gotham family, but the gray stocking star of the 1960s Batman TV show has passed away at age 88. And there's a quote here says, "Our dad always saw himself as the bright knight and inspired to make a positive impact on his fans, on their lives. He was and always will be our hero," his family said in a statement. West, he died peacefully in his home Friday night after a long battle with leukemia and is survived by his wife, Marcella, 6 children, 5 grandchildren, and 2 great-grandchildren. And he will forever in my life be known as the Indigo Batman. And he put on those bright purple, you know, Batman stockings and all that. And it was awesome.
And you know, even outside of his legendary Batman role, he was also a very, very well-known voice actor. He was on Family Guy and multiple other roles that he played in his life as well. And I mean, to live to 88, even battling cancer, even as sad as it is, he still lived a really full life.
Well, he was productive and, even up until just a couple of months ago on Family Guy doing voice recordings. I mean, that's if that doesn't say much about his work ethic, I mean, just keep on pushing ahead.
I know. Well, we'll say a little prayer for the family and hope that they find peace, but it's really sad news. I hate it whenever our favorite characters pass away.
Yes. it sucks.
I want to go watch the TV series after this show now. Thanks, Joe. Well, we're going to move into some Marvel news. If you have been living under a rock the last couple of days, you know that they unleashed the new Black Panther poster, giving a fan a good look at what the hero looks like unmasked and bethroned. Chadwick Boseman stares into the camera, and it's like a cold, dead stare.
It is
like
a pretty bad. It
in
is,
your soul. And he's dressed in black. The body's all contoured, and he's got the spiked collar and the claw-bearing suit. He's all fierce and scary looking. But the poster was released on Marvel's Twitter and all the other social accounts and paved the way for the teaser trailer to make its debut during the Game 4 of the NBA Finals. Smart marketing move, Marvel.
Yes, indeed.
Black Panther is set for February 16th of 2018. So that's just around the corner. That's not
it
that
is.
Far away.
And might I add, not too far away from the Deadpool 2 launch
that's
as well.
Right.
I think, if I'm not mistaken, which will be the 1st of March. So Marvel, you know, it looks like Fox and Black Panther, our MCU is going head-to-head with that one. But that's cool.
Yes.
So, Black Panther, did you see the trailer? Did you get a chance to?
I did get to see that.
It was pretty awesome.
It was really exciting.
I was
like, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, let's
it's a
do
different,
this.
It's a different culture. It's kind of like Marvel experimenting with other cultures and societies and ethnicities and stuff like that.
This is another character that I don't know a lot about other than what I've seen in the movies of him teaming up with the Avengers. So that'll be a new backstory I'll be excited to learn more about.
I mean, I'm excited. I was watching Doctor Strange today. We were cleaning the fish tank and I had Doctor Strange on and I was just like, you know what?
That
I forget
such a good movie.
What a great
That's
movie.
That's a good watch if you haven't seen it.
All right. Moving along with the news here this week, we also have a week after his 95th birthday. Speaking of Mr. Marvel himself, legendary creator, writer, penciler, and founder of Marvel Comics, Stan Lee, will be honored with the 2,428th star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. Stan Lee began his comic career more than 70 years ago at the young age of 18 years old as an assistant to Timely Comics. Now, we've covered a lot of this history in our history of comics, so if you go back and read some of those and watch some of those episodes, you might like it.
There's good nuggets back in that archive, for sure.
And later became an editor at age 19, one of the youngest editors at the time. And he continues to stay busy maintaining a full slate of projects even today. He has been celebrated with multiple awards from the comics industry, such as the Will Eisner Comic Book Hall of Fame and the Jack Kirby Hall of Fame Award. But this Walk of Fame star proves his appeal reaches further than that. He said, "I'm pretty proud of the fact that some of the stories I wrote so many years ago are still being read and hopefully enjoyed by the public, and people are making motion pictures based on them, and television series, and even a Broadway show," end quote. Of all of his creations, Lee's favorite character is Spider-Man because he's the most popular and known and loved worldwide, he said. "But I really loved them all. And whichever one I was writing at the moment. That was my favorite. So,
you know, whenever you ask a creator who your favorite character is, that's like asking a parent who their favorite child is. Yeah. You're spending so much time building not only their physical look, but also their background story, where they came from, and all of the story arcs that you grow with the character. And I mean, you engulf yourself in their entire fabric of their being. It's really difficult to set aside just one.
It is very, very, very well put, Lindsay, because if you think about it, Stanley, I remember him. There was a documentary that I watched not too long ago, but it's, you can't hardly find it anywhere. It's called The History of Comics, and it was a PBS documentary that they had put out, and it's like a 3-hour documentary. You can find it maybe on Amazon, but he had said something on there that I've never heard him say in any other interview. All the characters that he wrote about was during different phases of his life growing up. So the quirkiness of a teenager, of Peter Parker, became some of his real-life instances that he faced as a child. That's what he wrote about that. And, of course, writing about the Incredible Hulk, you know, the Jekyll Hyde, having a dark side and wanting to break out and, you know, being part of the corporate scene, he didn't enjoy that as much. So that's where the Incredible Hulk came from. So some interesting things there. But well, hats off to Mr. Stanley and happy 95th birthday.
Yes, happy 95th birthday. What a wonderful presence, right? Okay, so we're gonna go over to the other side of the tracks to the DC world and bring out a little bit of silly.
Okay.
I thought this was silly when I saw it. So DC Comics is bringing its characters into a whole new world thanks to a series of one-shots combining the DC universe and the characters from, wait for it, the Looney Tunes.
What?
The Looney Tunes. The mashups include, wait, these combinations are crazy. Some of them make sense. Some of them are like, what were they thinking? Okay, oh, so you've got the Legion of Superheroes and Bugs Bunny. Okay. Marvin the Martian and Martian Manhunter.
Oh.
So it's green on green on that one. So that one's going to be kind of interesting. Wonder Woman and Tasmanian Devil.
Tasmania, Amazonian, okay.
Okay. Lobo and Roadrunner.
What?
Jonah Hex and Yosemite Sam. Now, this one probably makes the most sense to me.
Outlaws.
Are they gonna work together in the storyline, or are they gonna work against each other and have like a showdown at high noon or something? You never know.
Oh boy. Okay.
But the last but not least, and the weirdest of all of them, is Batman and Elmer Fudd. let's process that one again a minute. And I mean, the cover art, if you go out in the world and you see the cover art, they're actually really well drawn and kind of cool to look at, but you just kind of like, what is Batman and Elmer Fudd gonna do?
Pardon my French, but that is freaking bizarre. Okay.
Well, this isn't the first time that DC has done comics like this, and they've done a whole month of Looney Tunes meets DC variants back in 2015, and there was also a Bugs Bunny and Superman miniseries back in 2000. However, it's clearly too good of an idea not to do again, and the crossovers launch twice a week, starting June 14th.
Well, that's this Wednesday.
So, Joe, I know you probably won't add this to your collection, but I'm sure you'll probably peek through it just to see how the Batman.
I may pick up the Batman Elmer Fudd copy just to kind of.
It's so wacky that you can't resist to just look at it and see what's going on.
Although I'm a little sad that Foghorn Leghorn wasn't involved in this crossover.
I saw a drawing that had a Foghorn character that looks similar. So he may show up in the background.
You saw a drawing?
I saw a drawing, I'm not gonna confirm, but I'm thinking that there's a character that looks similar to him with a cowboy hat on. I would check out the Jonah Hex episode.
Okay, well, moving on from comic book news on into now some really cool tech news. Of course, we know at PopX here we do video games and technology and all that kind of stuff.
Do a little bit of everything.
The E3 Expo is well underway this week, June the 13th through the 15th, and E3 is officially here, ladies and gentlemen. And what happens in between now and then is anyone's guess, but here's a few things experts are expecting to see. Now, number one, we've heard a lot of rumors about this on Microsoft's big project, Scorpio. It's an ultra-powered 4K HDR gaming console, and it will show up at its Sunday today. Keynote. I think, if I'm not mistaken, probably now as we're doing this.
Either now or I don't know when the timing was on it.
So hopefully by the time we have our next podcast,
we'll catch the replay. Cool.
Yeah. So also, number two, Nintendo is riding high off the success of the Nintendo Switch. And will there be a demo of Super Mario Odyssey? I don't know. But due out before the holidays, we do know it's coming and expected. And also, Sony may not have any hardware or new consoles coming out this year, but it will certainly have a bevy of games to show off on its PlayStation VR headset, as well as full trailers for Naughty Dogs and The Last of Us Part 2, as well as the mostly anticipated Spider-Man PS4 game. Now, Entertainment Arts, EA, might drop an entirely new IP at its show, so make sure that you don't miss the EA Play live stream. And finally, number five, Ubisoft is definitely taking the curtain off its brand new Assassin's Creed title, which we believe will be called Assassin's Creed Origins, and officially announcing Mario plus Rabbids Kingdom Battle, a.k.a. E3's worst-kept secret ever. Somebody dropped the ball on that one a little bit too early, but
yeah, okay. You know, you can't keep all the good stuff hidden. It just happens. No. Well, I don't have anything that I'm doing backflips over for the E3 this year, but I really do enjoy watching all of the headlines come through and see all the new stuff come out. The one thing I was kind of sad about is Red Dead Redemption 2 not coming out as they had promised. They pushed it back to next year. But I hope it's worth the wait, because that's a really cool
I do
series.
Want to say in the chat room, Darth has actually said that the new Xbox unit will be called Xbox One X.
Oh,
so maybe Darth is watching while he's watching us, and he's like multitasking with multiple monitors like Neo in the Matrix.
It's possible. Move or maybe on. He has one of those really cool new Samsungs that are like...
I don't know why I keep doing this. Why am I doing this?
Stop it. Like you got a fly in your way or something.
Like somebody had beans around. All right, moving on.
Well, we have some more Nintendo news and Universal news, because they got together and they are making a theme park. And I know we talked about this a little bit whenever we first got wind of it, but we have a little more details. Recently, they hosted the groundbreaking ceremony at the Super Nintendo World theme park attraction in Universal Studios Japan. Mm-hmm. And it confirmed that the Mario Kart ride will be the crown jewel of this little world. And also in its teaser trailer it released, you'll be able to visit the castles of both Peach and Bowser, and apparently they are next door neighbors. So I mean, they could be shops, it could be rides, you don't know what's going to be in them, but they have full castles. They're right there. All right. So one of the possible ideas that they've been kind of dreaming up for this park is to be able to bring your Switch systems to the park and be able to interact some way with the rides or the park with your system. And it's something that Mr. Miyamoto believes the Switch will be still growing when the park opens in 2020, which I think is a little bit of a stretch, but we'll see. Mm-hmm. We'll go with it. Yep. And it'll demonstrate the portable centric features that are being considered for future updates with the Switch. Okay. He also emphasized that the park may also incorporate other IPs aside from Mario, and he asked people to draw their own conclusions from that decision. And that's the reason why it's called Super Nintendo World and not Super Mario World.
Okay, got it. Got it.
All right, so the initial focus is reveals that it's clearly on Mario right now, but it may not be the exclusive angle of the attraction when it's finished. So they're still leaving it wide open for all the possibilities, because they have lots of time to figure out all the details. Mm-hmm. Because it's not going to open until right before the 2020 Tokyo Olympics.
Ooh, that's good timing.
And there, yes, it will be good timing. And no doubt there will be a Super Nintendo World at both Hollywood and Orlando if this park goes
Orlando
well.
In the house.
Yes, Joe, he's like, please make it work. Be successful. Please be successful.
It's really interesting, though, if they, you know, obviously they're going with the name Super Nintendo World.
Yes, so I want to see Sonic the Hedgehog up in that world.
Well, there's Sonic, which is owned by Sega. I don't know if they can do that, but we'll see. But there's Sonic. Then there's also Star Fox, Zelda. You have Metroid. you have all these games mm-hmm. that Donkey Kong.
Is Mega Man part of that too?
Mega Man is yes. definitely part of that. Yes. No, Capcom. Well, Mega Man's all about Capcom.
And Kirby. Kirby? Yeah,
maybe. I don't know. Maybe they can probably
never
do,
know.
But hopefully there might be a mix, not only just of Mario, but there might be a mix of everything. And that would be awesome.
Yeah. I think it's really
sweet. Fun. Well, 2020. And that means probably Orlando 2023 or something like that. So who knows?
We'll see.
All right. So moving on with the news. We only have two more headlines. We're going to dive into Wonder Woman. Heading into this opening weekend, the Wonder Woman box office estimates were low, even by Warner Brothers, but clearly reviews for the movie and lame pieces of controversy ended up working in Wonder Woman's favor as the movie crushed $100.5 million over the weekend. Now, this tally breaks a box office record held by Sam Taylor Johnson's 50 Shades of Grey as the highest opening weekend for a movie directed by a female director, 85.1 million.
I'm not going to lie, I watched it and I liked it.
Oh, my God, seriously. I'm not even going to go down that road. But the movie scored an impressive 93% rating overall on Rotten Tomatoes, if you are a Rotten Tomatoes fan. I personally am not. And it has become a DCEU movie to be certified fresh. It's the first ever.
One.
Yes. Even various members of the MCU have taken to social media to heap praise on the director, Patty Jenkins, and the movie, including Mr. Chris Evans, Captain America himself. So
yes, like all the Avengers, I believe, made a comment one way or the other, the actors and some of the directors as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So
it was pretty awesome.
Also, I want to say hello to Michael Murray in the chat room and Zachary Blum over in the chat room. We've got Darth hanging out and Luke. Got a nice little chat room going on over there.
We have some fun peeps hanging with us
tonight.
Yes,
we do.
Cool. Well, I'm going to continue with a little bit more Wonder Woman.
Okay.
Since we're talking Wonder Woman this evening. Mm-hmm. Though the Warner Brothers hasn't formally and officially and, you know, done the fanfare, but for the sequel of Wonder Woman. But there seems to be plans in the works already. Mm-hmm. Negotiations with the director, Patty Jenkins, who only signed up for one film, will now have major leverage thanks to the movie's historic opening weekend. Jenkins said that the next chapter will take place in the United States, which I think is right. That's what she said. And she's Wonder Woman. Mm-hmm. She's got to come to America. It's time.
Yes.
So the director has confirmed that if she comes back to direct it, that's where she wants Wonder Woman to start her next chapter, is in the United States doing her thing.
So she wasn't going to do a sequel.
She was only signed up to be with one movie because they didn't know how successful this movie was going to be.
That's awesome.
So they didn't want to sign up for another one.
She's got the directing fever. Ooh.
Yeah, baby. Oh, so hopefully she comes back and does round two.
Yeah,
it sounds like she's on board with it.
Well, with all of that said, that ends up our news segment for this week. We hope you guys enjoyed that. And now we're going to take a quick break and we're going to play our spoiler alert warning. We're going to dive into Wonder Woman's origin story coming up next, and then right after that, our film review. So stay tuned.
Right.
PopX continues.
Danger. You are about to enter a PopX spoiler alert. Beyond this point, there is no return. You have been warned.
All right, you have been warned. So if you've not seen the movie Wonder Woman, and we dive into this, we're sorry. So,
sorry, not sorry. You were warned.
Sorry, you're not sorry, but you're sorry. But we're sorry. Whoever's sorry, sorry.
What?
Anyway, so moving along, Wonder Woman's origin story. So let's talk a little bit about this. As one of the longest continually published comic book characters, Wonder Woman's history has undergone some changes over the years, or shall we say, decades. Though a few elements remain consistent in all of her depictions. Now, she is the princess of the Amazons, a race of women who live free of men. What do you think about that, Lindsay? But no men on that island. On Paradise Island. Later dubbed.
There's a reason why they fight, Joe. There's a reason why they fight.
Later dubbed Themyscira. Now, after growing up on the island, Wonder Woman, whom the Amazons named Diana, journeys to man's world on a mission of diplomacy and peace. And then until DC Comics New 52 relaunched, there were fewer other aspects of the origin story that remained consistent. Now, her mother, Hippolyta, created her out of clay, and the Greek gods bestowed her with life, making her the only Amazon who was not conceived by a man. Now, this is the comic book adaptation. Of course, we saw this in the film. It's a little bit different. We'll dive down that in a minute. So When Steve Trevor, an American pilot, crash lands on Paradise Island, the Amazons have a contest to determine who would receive the honor of taking him back to the man's world and acting as an ambassador of all the Amazons represent. Now, in the Golden Age, this led to an infatuation with Steve Trevor that persisted throughout the Golden Age and Silver Age versions of the character. Now, in the New 52, they have revised her origin story that actually she was molded herself out of Zeus. Zeus created her from clay. So.
Yes. Okay. All right. After Crisis on Infinite Earths, the character's origin was slightly retold by George Perez. In this version, the Amazons were in fact reborn from the souls of the abused and murdered women from the ancient days. In 1200 BC, a debate occurred on Mount Olympus on how mankind should be made to believe in the gods. Ares, the god of war, wanted to descend upon the world with his army and force mankind to follow the gods. This was opposed by the other gods present, including Artemis, who wished in peace and wanted to make a new race that would lead man onto the right path. Zeus turns his back on them, and they decide to proceed without his blessing. With the aid of, is it Charon or Charon?
Charon.
It is Charon. The ferryman. The gods reach the womb of Gaia, where the souls of women who were abused and murdered at the hand of men were preserved by Gaia herself. Artemis sends the souls to Greece, where they form into an adult woman. Aphrodite observes that one of the souls still remains in the womb, which Athena replies, the time had not yet come for that one. Mm-hmm. The new race in Greece were approached by the gods, who bestowed them with the skill of hunting and the purpose of leading humanity in the right path. They appoint Hippolyta and
Antiope,
thank you, as the rulers, while
Menelippe.
Yes, is the oracle. You guys, I am so bad with names. You're just going to have to let me struggle.
Lindsay is synonymous with names.
There's one thing that I'm consistent with, and that's butchering names, people.
But Lindsay, that's why we love you. We love to hear how you're going to say.
That's why you guys are all here, to hold my hand. Yes.
How is she going to say Menelippe? I don't know.
Menelippe?
All right, moving along here. So the civilization is named the Amazons. Now, stories of this civilization named Themyscira by the poets spread throughout Greece and reaches the ears of Hercules, who is driven into attacking the city behind the scenes by Ares, who seeks to sabotage the god's plan. Now, Hercules approaches the Amazons, but is defeated by Hippolyta, upon which he fakes friendship and declares the Amazons as allies. When their guard is down, he poisons Hippolyta, and the army attacks the women in full force, taking Hippolyta, Antiope, and the other survivors captive. In his cells, Hippolyta is freed by Athena, who reminds her of her purpose and asks her to avoid revenge and pursue peaceful means. Now, Hippolyta escapes and frees the rest of the Amazons, and she relies on Athena's message to the women, but blinded by their thirst for revenge, the Amazons slaughter the men ruthlessly. Now, the gods appear and tell them that they have failed in their purpose, and banished them into the island known as Paradise to guard the terrible evil within the punishment as punishment. They are also granted immortality. Now, what we're seeing here is we're actually seeing the battle between the gods, what has happened, why they got banned to Paradise Island, a.k.a. Themyscira, and we're seeing the evolution of Diana come in, because there was one that wasn't born yet, okay? So that's moving on. The Amazons build a nation and live there for millennia. Now, it's during this time that Hippolyta, the leader of the Amazons, feels an unexplainable yearning. She conveys this to the oracle, who tells her that she was the only one pregnant during her death, and thus the yearning she feels is a call for an unborn child. Dun, dun, dun. As per her advice, Hippolyta goes to the shore at sunrise and makes a clay form of a baby. She then cries out to Artemis. Seeing this, with the gods decide to... It was time for the remaining soul in the womb of Gaia to depart. The soul is sent in the clay form, and which becomes a real child blessed with Gaia's gift, life. Now Demeter grants the baby great strength. Aphrodite grants her great beauty and a loving heart. Now Athena grants her wisdom. Artemis grants her the eye of the hunter and the unity with the beasts. Now Hestia grants her the sisterhood of the fire, and Hermes gives her great speed and power of flight. Hippolyta names her after a holy warrior, Diana, and she grows up knowing love of a thousand mothers. Thus, Diana of Themyscira was born.
Nice. Yes. Now, the most recent version of the character's origin since the New 52 has not yet been told in totality, but certain things are known. It has been revealed how the Amazons replenish their numbers, and they do so by kidnapping sailors. Sorry. And then using them for their dirty business, and then they kill them.
Yeah.
Well, all right. As well, yeah. Oh my goodness. As well as the fact of Wonder Woman's divine lineage. Well, my goodness. Despite the fact that Zeus and her father is her father, it does not necessarily remove the other facts about her origin from canon. For instance, the blessing of the gods, though it remains to be seen how or if this will be incorporated into the new ongoing stories. In the zero month of the New 52, in which DC was planning to tell the origins of the characters from the New 52, the story of Diana focused on the fact that she had been trained by Ares when she was a teenager, though she eventually rebelled against him. It is yet unclear how this factors into her new origin. When Diana first came to the man's world, she encountered a group attacking the Pentagon. Because of this, she befriended Barbara Minerva, who was working there on ancient antiquities, and Barbara helped her acclimate to the man's world.
Yeah, so basically what happened was when Diana left Themyscira and came to the man's world, she basically started working as an assistant in Washington, D.C., at the headquarters at the Pentagon. So there you go. So that's how she gets to know all the intel and insider information. But yes, the Amazons over in the chat rooms are like, I didn't think the Amazons, I thought they were friendly. No, they're not.
No.
No.
Luke, have you seen the movie? They were badasses.
Yeah, pretty much. So let's talk a little bit about her actual creation. All right, so we've talked about her origin story, how she was birthed out of clay and Zeus gave her life.
Yes.
So let's talk about who actually created her. Who was the guy behind the pen that wrote the story? Well, Wonder Woman's appearance in the early Golden Age of comics made her the first prominent female superheroine. Now, the psychologist William Moulton Marston created Wonder Woman somewhat as a counter-reaction to the presence of prominent male superheroes at the time. This is Superman, Batman, Captain America, etc.
That makes sense.
With the hopes that the character could serve as an inspiration for young children, though in certain ways it was geared more towards the female readers. Now, Marston had been partially motivated to create his character because of the accomplishments of his own wife, who was also an accomplished academic at the time when it was difficult for women to fulfill this as a role. Now, as a result, the first Wonder Woman series contained many complimentary articles and features which sought to provide guidance and presumed female readership. There were articles, for instance, on the different career paths that women could pursue according to the standards of the 1940s, as well as a series of stories on famous and accomplished women called The Wonder Women of History. Now, Marston introduced the character in All-Star Comics number 8 in 1941, at the cusp of the atomic age. She became the leader and character in the Sensation Comics in 1941 and got her first solo book in 1942. Now, additionally, Marston had this to say about his own character, and he said this in quote in 1943. Not even girls, begin quote, so long as our feminine archetype lacks force, strength, and power, not wanting to be girls, they don't want to be tender, submissive, peace-loving as good women are. Women's strong qualities have become despised because of their weakness. The obvious remedy is to create a feminine character with all the strengths of Superman, plus all the allure of a good and beautiful woman, end quote. That's pretty good.
And that makes sense, because, I mean, think about your standard women roles that were considered by society. Mm-hmm. You needed to be a housewife. You needed to make sure your image was perfect at all times, and you had to basically be your husband's slave, and essentially.
Marston basically, he broke that stereotype in half. And he's like, you know what?
He basically sent out the message that says, screw that.
Yeah. It's the Leave It to Beaver family, you know? Pop comes home from a long day at work, and mom's, I've got the meatloaf in the oven for you, honey. Oh,
good old June.
Oh, God,
thank
love her.
You. Yeah, but you know. No. Well, speaking of powers and abilities, we need to kind of cover a little bit of what she has, because she's got a lot. All right.
She does.
So Wonder Woman's powers are a result of the blessings that she received from the gods, or presumably in the modern version by her divine ancestry, which essentially is the gods.
Yeah.
Come on. Her abilities in a large part come from her upbringing in the marital society of the Marshall.
Marshall.
No. Yeah, Marshall Society of Amazons. I can't read today.
It's okay.
She is one of the most powerful superheroes in the DC universe, and I think that shined through swimmingly in the movie. Yes. But we'll get to that later. All right, so we'll go over her strength first. Her level of strength is, like, super duper. Mm-hmm. It was granted to her by Demeter, and is comparable to that of the Earth itself, as this is where she derives her powers. She is thus strong on a level with the strongest other DC characters, including Superman and Captain Marvel. Mm. Or is it Captain Marvel?
Captain Marvel.
It is generally accepted that she is vastly stronger than Superman, but that she is one of the few in the higher class, a higher class than he is. Wonder Woman was even able to take on Power Girl in a hand-to-hand fight while trying to free her from mind control. Wonder Woman and Captain Marvel were an even match when they fought. And on one occasion, she even used her massive strength to move the Earth. Though this was under duress and aided by Superman, so she had some help.
Yeah.
And the Martian Manhunter as well.
Jean Jones.
With the launch of the new 52 Wonder Woman, she showed that with the new strength level while fighting a god. She removes her bracelets and goes into berserker rage of power. Now that's crazy. So she took her bracelets off and then she went cray cray.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Is that what happened?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Her bracelets control her power.
Oh, okay. So she's got, okay, that makes sense. We then find out that Wonder Woman's bracelets are what protects her opponents from her intense power, and Wonder Woman had a quick match with Supergirl where she found out that they are close in strength. Wonder Woman overpowered Supergirl with her bracelets still on.
Mm. So we're talking about a being here that could literally go tooth and toenail with Superman and probably be able to hold her own for a good duration of the fight. And we're talking about the son of Krypton, Kal-El himself. So this is pretty godlike power we're talking about. So let's talk a little bit more about a couple of her traits. One of them is superhuman speed. Now, granted by Hermes, that's the god of messengers, her top speed has never really been well documented, but she has been shown to be faster than half the speed of light. Now, the Flash has said that the Wonder Woman can easily keep up with him, and she has been seen keeping up with the Flash going faster than hypersonic speed. Now, this wasn't shown in the movie. Yeah. She has been shown to be on par with some of the fastest characters in the DC universe, such as Jesse Quick. Now that we know Jesse Quick, okay.
Yes.
She can disarm human opponents of their weapons instantly, and she can immobilize her opponents in the blink of an eye, as she showed when she speed blitzed the White Martian and genocide into space in no time, and was able to take down the Amazon before he could finish the word. She is such a well-trained athlete that in combat, her reflexes even surprise the likes of Superman. Pretty darn interesting. Now let's talk about her invulnerability and durability. All right, so granted by Demeter, that's the goddess of Earth, in the pre-52 series, so we're talking just a few years ago before the new 52, She is immune to radiation and the coldness of space, so she can literally fly into space and it not bother her. She also possesses a high level of resistance against fire and high temperatures. She has been shown taking fire, lava, thermonuclear explosions, hellfire, and even Superman's own heat vision. However, her invulnerability has a vulnerable point against piercing weapons. Wonder Woman can fight withstood considerable damage in the form of hand-to-hand combat with opponents such as Superman and gods. Wonder Woman possesses a high resistance to damage and magical attacks. Also, she was self-sufficient in the fact that Wonder Woman did not have to eat or sleep and could hold her breath underwater for hours and hours. This may still hold true in the New 52, but Wonder Woman has still shown the ability to fight on with little, no rest, food, replenishment, or even resting for strength. Now, Wonder Woman can fight till she drops dead, literally. She does not need to rest. Wonder Woman's agility is on a superhuman level. Eyesight, hearing, taste, touch, and smell are all super enhanced on a superhuman level. Wonder Woman has the hunter's eyes, which allows her to always hit her mark and see from a far distance. Pretty freaking incredible.
Yeah. Well, and you know that you had said something about the her being able to tolerate heat really, really well. And she proved that in the Batman versus Superman movie and when she was Doomsday. So that was a good example of that right there. All right. So she can fly, as you mentioned. Granted by Hermes, the Greek patron of messengers and thieves, this ability allows her to fly at fast speeds. And in the Silver Age, she could not fly and had to rely on the Amazon ability to glide on air currents and, of course, her invisible plane.
Dun, dun, dun. There you go.
Wonder Woman was able to fly at hypersonic speeds, able to keep up with Superman.
Yes. Interesting.
And then another wonderful little gift that she was given is she has been granted by Demeter, the goddess of Earth, again. In the rare instance when Wonder Woman is harmed, her body heals from any injury instantly without any scarring. That's how she has that beautiful dew-like skin.
You can demolish that face and she just heals faster than Wolverine. It's crazy.
Man, I don't know, but it sounds to me like I need to make friends with Demeter because she's like giving out the
Demeter's
ever.
Throwing it out. I mean, if you're she's opening up the packs of trading cards, you want Demeter to give them to you.
All right, so one more we're going to add to the heaping pile of awesomeness. She has divine wisdom granted by Athena, the goddess of wisdom.
Sorry, you just said heaping pile of awesomeness. That's pretty freaking awesome. Yes, you did. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
This gives her a degree of wisdom beyond that of most mortals and gives her a strong moral sense. This also aids her in her tactical ability. She is among the smartest and wisest members of the Justice League of America, along with the Martian Manhunter and Batman.
All right. Batman. So, well, you know, it's interesting. I'm reading some of the comments over here. Andy, Club PR, he says that Wonder Woman can definitely defeat Superman. And the invisible jet scenes were always my favorite in the TV series, says Luke. And so that's pretty awesome. And not a lot of drag on an invisible jet. No, there's not. That's pretty funny. Do you guys like the fact that Wonder Woman was in love with Superman?
I'm in love with Superman.
I'm in love. Yeah, there's definitely some Superman love there. So
I love a good love story.
Yes, I do too. So, Lindsay Badger, could you refresh for me, my dear? You're just a little bit glitchy.
Yes.
So we'll refresh and get her back in here and get all freshened up, and then we'll continue on. I got one more section, then we're going to go into our film and movie review. So stay tuned with us. You're looking nice and unpixelated.
Yes,
all right, so here we go. The last of her origin. Not to mention, she has a plethora of superhuman abilities at her dispense any time, including super stamina, enhanced senses, enhanced vision, and can even project herself. This one blew me away. Astrally, much like Doctor Strange. She can have herself out of a body experience. It's true. Not to mention, God of War powers, trained in brutal martial combat, among many other hidden Amazonian war techniques. Now, in her arsenal, she holds the lasso of truth, which forces all of her victims and people to tell the truth. You have no way to go. It is the ultimate truth serum. The bracelets of victory, which are indestructible because they were molded from the remains of Zeus's Aegis shield, she can deflect projectiles, and when she crosses them together, she can create nuclear explosions and can also protect with her energy shield just by crossing her bracelets together. Pretty awesome. Now, last but not least, she wears the royal tiara, which can injure those susceptible to magic like Superman. And let's not forget about that invisible plane that Lindsay Badger just hit on. Yes, it's true. But mainly from the Golden and Silver Ages when Diana found the Lansanar disc. Now, the disc was a piece of alien technology which allowed her to create an invisible version of whatever object or vehicle she visualized it to be. She would use this to create the invisible plane, but it eventually became used more to create the Wonder Dome, her secret place where she goes and chills out.
The Wonder Dome. Now, Andy brought up an interesting little thought. He would like to see Wonder Woman and Batman get together instead of Superman. I'm sure that...
I don't know. Could you imagine Wonder Woman and Barry Allen going
as long as it's not... No.
Supersonic.
No.
I just dropped that little nugget there for you right there. Yeah, I don't know. All right, so we're going to do the movie review. We're going to actually let my cousin Austin Burke take it away right now, and he's going to share his thoughts.
We are missing a member of our club tonight.
This is true. We're missing a member of our tribe. He's on vacation with his honey over in North Carolina. So, Austin, I hope you're doing well. This is a note from Austin on Wonder Woman. We'll be right back.
Hello, Joseph and Lindsay, my two favorite podcasters. I am sad to report that I'm probably on the road somewhere in North Carolina right now, but I know you guys have been killing it with the origin of Wonder Woman. I just want to take a second to let everyone know what I thought about the movie. If that's okay, are you ready? Yeah, well, it was fine. Just kidding. It's freaking great. You guys, I had so much fun with this movie. The characters are great. The interactions between the team are a blast, and Chris Pine really steals the show. Well, from everyone except for Gal Gadot, who is, wait for it, wonderful. You see what I did there? While I didn't think she's the best actress out there prior to this movie, she really surprised me here, and she's done a lot to improve her status with me. She plays this woman with the furiosity and hilariousness that makes for the perfect Wonder Woman. I do think the real hero, though, is Patty Jenkins, who directed this movie with the fire and skill of someone who has directed 20 movies up to this point. The meshing of tone, smart dialogue, and on-screen chemistry defines this film. But not every movie is perfect, and while I had so much fun with Wonder Woman, I did have some minor problems. Starting off, some of the CGI was a little weak enough for me to notice it and allow it to take me out of the movie for just a second. The secondary villains aren't great either, and I thought Dr. Poison was kind of in a different movie. She was just so over the top for me. And while I liked some of the twists and turns in the third act, I was upset that it took the typical CGI boss battle approach. I wanted something more personal to go along with this intimate story that we had gotten up to this point. And don't get me wrong, Ares was sweet and he looks great, but I just thought it could have been handled a little bit better. What I will say about Wonder Woman is this. This is a movie full of cliches and things that have been used in plenty of superhero movies before it, but the difference here is this movie does it better than most superhero movies before it, and for that, you have to applaud it. All in all, Wonder Woman was a great movie. It's just what the DCEU needed. I'm a huge Man of Steel advocate, but this may be my favorite DCEU movie. I'll know after a second watch, but I do for sure think it's a better made film. I'm gonna shut up now and give Wonder Woman an 86% or an 8.6 out of 10. It's truly the first great, technically, and just all-around sound film of the summer of the DCEU. Well, guys, that was fun. Let's get back to the squad and hear their thoughts. I can't wait to see what you guys have to say. Joe, thanks for letting me do this, man. I will be back in 2 weeks, ready to roll.
Okay, bye.
That Austin Burke, I'm telling you what. Austin Burke,
He knows his movies.
He knows how to throw down. And, you know, I have to kind of agree with him. There were some really great parts about this movie that is literally, this is the defining movie for the DCEU. And going forward, I think most of the movies, now, here's something that wasn't covered in news, but I'm going to drop this for you. There was reshoots ordered this week for Justice League because of the success of Wonder Woman.
Whoa.
And these are extensive reshoots. We're talking now. Wonder Woman now. Justice League comes out in November this year, and they're already doing extensive reshoots. I think they've tweaked the story. They've realized that there's some parts in it that probably stink like a turd, so they're trying to fix it up and make it work.
Here's the only thing I'm worried about. I hope that they don't spend too much money doing the reshoots, that they don't get their return. That would be my only concern. Other than that, fix it and make it awesome.
And I'm still hopefully on board that, you know, one day we'll get to see Batfleck reprise his role as Batman and come back for the Batman, which has kind of been this on. We've covered it on PopX for the past several months.
It's like a phantom movie concept.
I don't think it's going to be working. But Lindsay, why don't you, since you're the lady of the group, why don't you go ahead, since Austin's already done it, share your thoughts on Wonder Woman.
I will be happy to. I actually took notes this week because I was so scared because we watched the movie last weekend and I was like, oh my God, there's going to be a whole 7 days before I have to regurgitate this whole thing. Yep. So I did take some notes. So I'm going to have a few bullet points to cover. Hopefully it won't take too long and it won't be too boring. But I loved Gal.
Okay.
Gal Gadot was amazing. And there's one little nugget that I'd like to share, a little nerd nugget. Oh my God, it's a nerd nugget. She was 5 months pregnant during the filming of this movie.
She was 5 months pregnant.
And she did a lot of like the up close stuff and the more where she's like walking around London clothed and everything in her later months in the more action scenes. They took a little green cloth over her baby bump and they CGI'd that out. And she did all of that whenever she was like more towards the beginning of the 5 months pregnant thing. Okay. I am woman. Hear me roar is all I've got to say to her for that. Because that's when fierce. I was 5 months pregnant, I wanted to take a nap. I didn't want to do stunts. Okay. So yeah. I am giving her props for that. And that aside from her amazing acting and pulling that character and bringing it to life throughout the whole movie. And she's just gorgeous. Just her overall package as a person. I'm just in love with her.
Yes.
Okay. And
she has a beautiful package.
She has a beautiful package.
She has a beautiful package.
In addition to her, all of the other Amazons, the gorgeous, athletic, beautiful Amazons on the island were just amazing. Their stunting was amazing. I was just in love with all of those beautiful women. I hope everyone else was too, because they were amazing. Intro with Wayne Enterprises was a really nice tie-in to not only the previous movie, Batman vs. Superman, which I had to watch last night just for this show. I can't get those 3 hours back in my life. And and also a look forward to the Justice League to continue to remind yourself that this is all going to come together at some point and tell a story where everyone plays together to fight some big bad. Diana's mother, I really, really wish that she would have shared some of the backstory with Diana before she left the island. But I realized at the end of the movie, that would have been absolutely pointless to have any dialogue with Ares whatsoever, because that was the only reason why they talked. So I wish that she would have known before she left the island.
Yeah.
Cause you know, she's a smart chick and that would have made more sense. Romance level in this movie. I'm okay with it. I'm okay with it. I like a little bit of sappy, but it wasn't like overkill on the love. There wasn't a lot of super gore, you know, adulty stuff. There was a little bit of, oh, I really like him. He's really sweet. Totally fine level on that. Ares. I think he was my biggest problem
really?
In this movie.
Yeah.
I did. He bothered me. It was a combination. His character was like a combination of Magneto from X-Men. Mm. And Nigel from Austin Powers, and he flies around like Superman. Mm. And I think he didn't really feel really godlike to me. I know he was doing godlike things, but he didn't really have like the full godlike package completely together. And I really think that the biggest thing that bothered me was the mustache.
Yes.
That British stuffy drink a cup of tea mustache, it killed it for me. Because whenever they did the awesome helmet thing out of, and they did the helmet thing where that, and then you just see mustache, and it's like, ugh. But other than that, he was
Pip
fine.
Pip Cheerio.
Pip Cheerio, have a good day. Yeah. You know, so he kind of killed it for me. I loved the special effects with his outfit was okay, but it was just that little thing sticking out there that just really killed me. There was a really good balance between fight scenes and story scenes. Mm-hmm. So there wasn't anything that was really dragging for me, and they didn't overkill like, you know, a Transformer movie would, for example. Mm. so that was good balance. I felt like there's a lot of entertainment there that didn't, you know, take me out of like, oh my God, is this over yet? We were good there. I did have a question. Why does a spy have a secretary? She was great for comic relief, but in this movie, and I'm sure there's a backstory to her that I don't understand. She doesn't make any sense to me at all.
See, here's the thing. Agent Carter was a spy, and Agent Carter had a secretary as well.
Okay. So, I really didn't really understand the point of her character other than pulling some comic relief during picking out her outfit.
I think her role was comic about relief. It. Yeah.
I think that the movie could have done without her.
I kind of liked her.
To be honest. But she was fun. She was fun. I enjoyed her. When the rowboats were coming in and they discovered him, Asteria, and they go through the little force field, then there's that gigantic boat behind them. The Germans are coming. Mm-hmm. Where the heck did that boat go?
The giant boat?
Did the Amazons sink the boat? Because the boat came through the force field, but I didn't never see what happened to the boat. Because you know there's more people on there.
That's a really good question. What happened to the boat? Maybe they captured them and they're going to rape them in.
Maybe. Sailors, yes. Sailors. We're going to make some more Amazons tonight, people.
Let's have some sailor.
Okay, Chris Pine as Steve Trevor. Okay, so Steve Trevor as a character in general has nothing to do with Chris Pine and his job that he did. I hate characters that have two first names.
Okay.
Steve Trevor is just really annoying. But as Chris Pine, I loved him through the whole movie. It didn't bother me that he's also Captain Kirk. I could separate those two characters. I've read some reviews that had an issue with that. That didn't bother me at all.
Steve Trevor came from 1941.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, go ahead.
He did. Yeah. But that's pretty much my points on what my thoughts were on the movie. I think overall it was amazing. They did a fantastic job, and I really hope that this brings DC back up to a higher level of standard of making films. Because
anything's better than Batman vs.
God, Superman. They need it. They need it. Oh. I'm going to save my number till after you do yours,
though. Okay. The pressure's on with me. Okay,
yes.
So for me going in, I purposely didn't watch a lot of trailers and a lot of teasers. I do that for these kind of films because I want to go in blindly without any kind of preconceived notions. Going in, I was very entertained with the whole movie from beginning to end. I thought that the comedic relief was on point. I thought that Diana's comedic lines were great. The first time she tried ice cream, that is a direct line.
I love
from
the ice cream.
That's a direct thing from the comic book where she tried
you
that.
You should be proud.
Yeah. You should be proud. It's so.
You should be proud.
This is delicious. But I thought that her overall character was really well developed. And the fact that she was molded from the hands of Zeus, that goes back to her original origin stories. There's parts of this movie that is from all of the different eras of the Wonder Woman's legacy, from the Golden, Silver, and Bronze Age all the way through. So they've taken those elements that seem to work and flow better for this film, and I really do appreciate that. And it was really cool to see Themyscira. There were parts of the CGI that kind of seemed a little flawed. I think Austin may have hinted at that a little bit. There were some, like when some of the shots, some of the more landscape-style shots, just kind of seemed a little bit cheesy. There's just you can tell it was computer generated. So I was like, okay, I'm moving on. But it's not Doctor Strange. I get that. So I thought the whole thing with Steve Trevor coming in, I thought that was a great thing. I thought the love story was great. Probably could have done without the scene with the where the light goes off in the apartment building above that. You know, I'm just like, such a great movie. But then you're saying, oh, well, they went and had happy time and made happy time. You know, so anyway. So
everyone loves a little happy time.
Let's break some beds. But
he had to tell her how people were actually made.
Yes, and he had to show her. So that's
visual demonstration.
You know, demonstration by practice is the only way of really truly learning anything in this world.
It really is.
But so let's see. Talking about Ares as a villain, I thought that the villain totally blindsided me in this. Because I expected the villain to be the bad, big bad German guy, and he wasn't, and it was actually Ares the whole time. And there was a scene about 30 minutes into it where the individual was actually interacting with Steve Trevor, I think, and he kind of, there was something that just seemed, I was like, what is that about him? And I just played it off. I didn't think much about it. And then at the end of it, I'm like, oh my God, there was totally a drop of that in the beginning because he kind of done something that was a little quirky that just kind of seemed off. And then I'm like, oh, well, he's Ares disguised as a mortal. I get it now.
Yes.
Not only as a mortal, but as a flawed
mortal. It was a good disguise because you fooled me.
Yeah, pretty much. But I think that overall, the development of Ares and how Ares tricked her and the battle, yes the battle was full-blown CGI. Eye candy the whole way through. Most of these big films in the third act are CGI heavy on the third act by the time they get into the battle scene. But I was okay with that. I thought that Ares' armor looked great. It was flaming. It was on fire. It looked like lava.
It was really cool. It was really awesome.
And I thought that just the whole sacrificial thing of Steve Trevor going into the air when the plane is sacrificing himself to save the greater good.
That made me cry. I was like, maybe he's going to come back at the very end, but he never did. So I was kind of sad.
Okay. Moving on. I think that that was a really humble act and humility on Steve Trevor's part. Yes. And I thought that was a really great addition because Steve Trevor technically is 30 years in the comics right now. And so they killed him off in the first movie. So I'm kind of curious, will there be something else with between Diana and Superman? So I'm just saying there might be some kind of dynamic there. So overall, I was really well pleased with the comedic relief. I was pleased with Chris Pine as acting as F. Trevor. Gail Gadot did an amazing job as the Amazon. The story was really great. I mean, hats off to Jenkins. She did a phenomenal job directing this piece. And
oh, yes.
I mean, she's pretty much essentially a nobody. She's only done just a couple of TV series, and for her to come out of this as official directing debut of a major blockbuster film is pretty phenomenal on her first try. So I think that's
I think, if I remember correctly, all of them were one-shot scenes, except for maybe a couple over on the No Man's Land, like just before
I was getting ready to talk about No Man's Land. I think that's one of the most iconic comic book scenes ever filmed as of recently. I mean, of course, we have Civil War, Captain America, and we have some really iconic moments. You know, we can always go back to the airport scene in Civil War when they battle and have the 15-minute, you know, Ant-Man going into Giant Man and all that. I think, honestly, when we think about DC, we're going to think about No Man's Land. And when she got up on that ladder and she assumed the role, it's like she just got those bracelets together, deflected those bullets, and just, man, plowed into the Germans like they didn't know what was
coming. She was a badass.
Yeah, she was awesome.
That's what she was.
So I was really happy. There was very few things that I could pick away on this movie. Thinking about Ares with a mustache
that's a very nitpicky thing. And I think they could have changed it to where maybe it was darker so you couldn't see that. And I would be fine.
Here's the thing they should have done with that one scene, and I would have been perfect with it. When he revealed himself as Ares, his face should have morphed.
Yes.
His face.
I 110% agree with
and
that.
And he should not have, like, oh, Pippa Cheerio, let's have a little duo, shall we? Come on now, Diana.
Yes. There should have been, like, a reveal of his true self or some thing.
Yeah.
That would be probably the only thing that was missing there for me.
He kept his face and the Sherlock mustache. And so we had to deal with that. And it was okay. It was okay. It didn't really take away from the battle at all. But it was definitely, I was kind of looking at it a couple times. I'm like, man, that's a nice looking stash you got there. But, just a nice little god fuzzbuster.
Yeah, I mean, as a character, he was fine. I just couldn't get past the visual.
Have you been tickling Hippolyta with the old footsies on the old mustache? Yeah?
What did you think of Chris Pine's crew of shenanigans that he had?
I thought it was great. I thought that his group, I loved the thick Scottish guy. I loved the Native American who embraced compassion and heart. And I just thought the whole group was just amazing. I thought it was really good. And it was a nice little story. You know what? It was really cool because you had a guy who was Arabic who believed in what he believed, and you had a Native American, and then you had a well-rounded Scottish guy who was just off hinges. Yes. And then you had Chris Pine. He could sing and play the piano too. But I thought it was a really great group. But Lindsay Badger, what is your official score?
I'm going to have to give this movie an 8.9.
An 8.9. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I will give this movie as well. If you're listening to PopX, this is a 9.4 coming from me. I gave this actually a couple of weeks ago when I saw the film. I was like, okay, this is easily a 9.4. Story-wise, it's just sound, shot by shot. Yes. It's very sound. It's very fluid. There's not quirkiness. And when we nitpick this movie, we're just really just...
Yeah, we're not hating on the movie. This movie.
This movie is going to be one on our shelves. We're going to own this in our library. It's going to be a great one. And I think it's going to definitely overshadow Batman versus Superman. I think fans will probably want to get rid of that one and not remember it as much. So...
No, I want to forget it. I can't say that this is my favorite DC movie of all time. Dark Knight still holds that special slot for me, but I think that's easy number two or three, mm-hmm. given if I really think about it. But it's definitely in the top five for sure. Guaranteed.
For me, it would be Batman 1989, Michael Keaton. Definitely yes. That one. Tim Burton, that would be my number one. Number two below that would be Superman. The movie from 1978, and then right under that would definitely be Wonder Woman. That would be my top three movies from the DC movie.
Yes.
Right, but moving forward, we're actually going to wrap up now. That is officially that's it. And look at that. We're right on time, Badger.
We are. I'm glad we got all that squished into our time.
We did. So, and always, guys, if you see something exciting on the shelves, at your local comic book shop, or in the theater and around geek culture in general, please let us know on social media and Instagram or Twitter by using our hashtag YoPopX. That's YoPopX. If you use a hashtag, we could use your post or image on a future episode of PopX.live. So hashtag YoPopX. And also,
let us know what you saw.
Yes, absolutely. And we're also a part of an amazing network called the Gunna Geek Network. For all things even more geeky, head over to GunnaGeek.com and check out some amazing podcasts from our home network, the Gunna Geek Network.
That's right. And make sure you connect with us on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, Twitter, and Pinterest. Everywhere is at PopXcast. We love to hear from our listeners. So if you want to send any comments or suggestions about the show, make sure you email us at popxcast@gmail.com. And also for any future or past shows, make sure you go to our website and check that out, www.popxcast.com.
Mm-hmm.
And once again, I am Lindsay Badger. You can find me at LR Badger all over the internet.
And I am Joe Burke, aka at Joseph Burke Arts. That's JoseephBurkArts on the internet. And of course, hats off to my amazing team PopX. It's Mr. Austin Burke, who will be back with us next week, and Miss Lindsay Badger for throwing down some social media love. Now remember, we are bi-weekly, so it won't be next week. It'll be the week after that. 2 weeks from now, we will be going in on June 25th for episode 59, Transformers The Last Night Review. So we'll be doing that and covering a couple of some really awesome news stories in between that. So thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks for watching. And we want to send a big shout-out to Andy, Darth, Luke, Michael. Let's see who else we got here. All the crazy people.
Zach Blum popped in.
Zachary Blum. All right, guys. Guys, take care. God bless. We'll see you next time right here on PopX Cast. Get you geeky.
Bye.
From everyone at PopXCast, thanks for listening. Be sure to give us a 5-star rating on iTunes and subscribe for more great content. Drop us an email, popxcast@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook and YouTube, all at PopXCast. Get your geek on. From everyone at PopXCast, thanks for listening. Be sure to give us a 5-star rating on iTunes and subscribe for more great content. Drop us an email, popxcast@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook and YouTube, all at PopXCast. Get your geek on.